As always, subscribe and click the notification bell on our YouTube channel. Be active on our Facebook group, East Coast Distressed Note Investing, and be sure to go to our website for all your note investing tools, resources, and available assets. If you have any questions, email us at tradedesk@jkpholdings.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to another Real Estate Notes show. I'm your host, Dave Putz, and actually we'll be talking today about originating notes in creative financing and talking about RMLO work from a broad scale. But before I get too far ahead of myself, my co-host, Mr. Nathan Turner, how are you, man?
Good. Really good.
Oh,
it's been a busy week.
Time of year.
It's that time of year. It's been a busy week, but it's been good. It's been good.
Yeah. So I think for us, it's just kind of really getting into the thick of things in the summertime, right? And for those out there, I'm sure you're juggling kids and family and birthdays and holidays, as well as the note spot. You know, that kind of area is sometimes a little bit difficult to juggle all of it.
It can be tough.
We'll definitely kind of help you through it in the process.
For
and
sure.
One of the areas we've been hearing a lot from people out there is this whole idea about RMLO and unsure about what it all means.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a tough one. Going back, you know, for those trying to figure out that work-life balance, I heard something a couple of years ago that helped put it in perspective for me. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as perfect balance. So don't try to get there, because there is no such thing. The guy that I was listening to, he talked about it being spinning plates. You know, those circus guys that have the spinning plates. You spin one plate, that's your work life. You can spin another plate, that's your home life. You do another plate, that's your hobbies. You know, another plate, that's whatever. Different things you're doing. At different times, each one of those things is going to need more attention. So you spend the time on the thing that needs attention at that time, and then you move on to the next. That's balance.
Yeah. So it's not like one thing just rocks and roll, right? You're constantly juggling all of it. And how you juggle it is the biggest question.
Constantly. But yeah. RMLOs. So we've talked a lot about, just in this last probably year and a half, a lot about people that are originating notes and creating notes, and just the importance of doing it properly. Cause we've seen, and we continue to see notes where they're coming in and they're just not done properly. They're not done in a way that will get you the best purchase price.
Yeah.
So if you're doing it properly, if you do it the right way, we'll actually pay you more.
So let's back up there, right? Why does someone want to sell a note, right? Why does this matter? And for me, you don't have to ever sell a note. You can create these and do a really good job of creating all these assets.
Yeah.
And this episode is not only about selling a note, but creating it in a way that's legal. For the fact that if you ever have this note default, you're back behind law and security, the fact that you can literally turn around and foreclose on the borrower. What we're finding a lot of paper out there, we can't buy because we know we can't foreclose on it.
Right. Right.
And you can't either.
That's the issue. And why does somebody want to sell a note? So here's an example. So I went to Tom Henderson's class here a couple months ago, and he told us about how, I mean, Tom's a legend. He's been around forever. He's a guy that I aspire to be like. And he was talking about how he had a bunch of notes and he's got, you know, monthly income coming in, fantastic. And then he had pneumonia 3 times in 1 year. That added a whole bunch of medical expenses that he wasn't planning on. So in order to get a more lump sum of cash that he needed right then, he sold some notes. That could be a reason that you might want to sell some notes, just because you need a lump sum of cash for who knows what. Kids going off to school, you want to renovate the kitchen. Yep. I mean, who knows what? There's all kinds of different reasons you'll need a lump sum today where it makes it worth it for you to go out and sell a note.
Yeah. And I think that most people, if they want to recapitalize it, there's all kinds of reasons to sell a note, but I think you don't want to remove that exit strategy.
Yeah.
Right? That exit strategy, that possibility of needing to get capital needs to be there.
Right. Right. And besides the selling part, like we were saying before, like what about a foreclosure? What if they stop paying and then you have to go through the legal process. If your note is not done properly, you're going to have a very difficult time foreclosing. And that's going to be all kinds of trouble that you just don't want. Yeah. So if you can do it properly up front, you can plan for all these things that are going to happen 2, 5, 10 years down the road that you could never foresee.
And a lot of misinformation out there about what is it like to create a note correctly, right? Anyone can create a note wrong. I think that correctly part is really, really big on stuff, right?
I've done it
wrong. So we'll make sure that's available, right?
Yeah.
So
so one more thing before we bring our guest on here. DME, Diversified Mortgage Expo, is coming up. You want to get your tickets sooner than later. Early bird pricing runs out on Tuesday next week. That is the last day to get early bird pricing. So get your tickets. Use Dave's link, but make sure you get your tickets because it's coming up soon. If you want to spend an extra $100 next Wednesday, okay, I'm okay with that. But save yourself money. Get your tickets sooner than later. And your hotel.
Also, for those out there, we just launched our ebook for due diligence.
Yeah.
If you are curious about that, please feel free to jump in there take a look at that on our website. Well, with that said, we have our ebook out there.
That's exciting. That's good.
So the DME is coming up in a month.
Just over a month.
Hopefully
just over
you
a
fly
month.
In there, take a look at that.
I actually just bought my plane tickets yesterday, so.
I bought mine, about a week and a half ago. Everything's good. I'm locked into a Thursday and whatnot, so.
Yeah, exciting. It's going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's bring him in. Nick, sorry about the little confusion here. I'm not sure if my internet, whatever going on, but we'll figure it out. So, Nick, I think what most people are looking to find out more about you is, who are you? Right? Who are you? Most people like ourselves never heard of you, right? And it's amazing to hear that this space is small, as I'm sure you know. To hear about there's someone out there that is licensed in this many states doing RMLO work is awesome. And I know this isn't always a field you're in, but I'm sure that our group, our tribe will kind of find you and then go from there.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for having me. But I'm definitely a seasoned real estate investor, and that's what brought me into this industry. But right now, I'm a licensed lender, and we're actually in 23 states and then DC, so 24 total that we can cover. And we love to work with investors, so definitely love to speak with your crowd here. Not our typical investors, right? We're typically looking at the takeout end of things and financing out of short-term or seller finance notes or other creative financing. But I'm always interested in helping our clients get into creative financing as well. And I actually have I'm on the other end as well. I actually have a commercial space with seller financing. So as a investor, I take advantage of your clients here when it's out there, right? So I have a commercial space that's actually a restaurant nightclub where I got a seller finance note at 6%. So obviously not the rates that you guys want to hear about. That was quite a while ago, but definitely in the space personally. So I've been investing for over 10 years. And as I mentioned, have some seller finance, done all kinds of creative finance, second finance, all kinds of different ways that I do it myself to get creative. Don't own any notes myself, so I appreciate all you guys doing that end of things.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what brought me into real estate. I have a real estate company here in Miami called Miami Real Estate Agency with about 40 agents. And then also the mortgage company is kind of the fruition of being an investor for over 10 years, getting into doing my own real estate purchases, sales, all that stuff for any flips I'm doing. And then obviously the natural progression was to get into the finance end, but you know, more of the traditional finance is kind of where I come from. So not afraid to get licenses and all that stuff. Been doing that for many years, and not afraid to start businesses. A lot of different businesses I have. I own about 10 different businesses in all kinds of different industries, but real estate's kind of my mojo. So come from being an investor for over 10 years myself, and definitely love to do it for everybody else and spread the word out there for people to get creative and use people like you guys. So I'm definitely into it. I just haven't been on this side of things. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
So
Very cool.
how long ago did you get into actually the Armalo work and that business of creating these DSCR loans? How long have you been doing that kind of work?
So it's been about 5 years now. So
Okay.
I have a lead generation company, so I do a lot of lead generation. And I was hired by a bank, and the bank, FDIC Bank, was all 50 states, and it was very easy to advertise, nationally. But as my interest was investor based, and that's kind of where I was leaning towards, we didn't have outlets for investors, right? So the bank space was not creative for me. It was not conducive for my clients and my typical investors out there. So we built a big team at a broker shop. Because we were generating millions of dollars in business, but it wasn't the types of business that we really wanted to do. So we took that to a broker model where we could find all kinds of different creative outlets and had hundreds of different lenders and banks and everybody we would work with. And then that came into doing it again, kind of working my way up the totem pole, right? I love to work and get up the chain. So we went from broker to brokering to now being our own lender. And paying for all those licenses, I had to put up over $1 million just to get the licenses, right? So you guys can all take advantage of that $1 million that I had to put up just to pass the compliance to get the state licenses. And yeah, just keep growing. So we're into growing. Me and my partners are into investments ourselves. So we're into I guess kind of getting to the core of it, right? Moving our way up the food chain, and we can continue to move our way up the food chain as we grow. So we're excited to take our people with us and our clients with us, and we're all about giving our benefit to our clients, right? We're not going up the food
Absolutely.
chain to make more money for ourselves. We're going up the food chain so that our clients can make more money on their deals, right? We're getting
Absolutely.
better rates and terms and more creative options for our clients that then allow them to get more, basically liquidity is really what we're all about here, right? So it's
Absolutely.
kind of
So,
a
what do
natural
you say the
progression.
biggest mistake people who are creating these notes or gathering information, what are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen in the space of these creation of notes?
I would say first off, there's definitely a whole continuum of these notes, right? I've seen one page notes to full on standard notes that we have. So my goal is always to try to securitize a loan, right? So this is probably something you guys aren't really used to, you guys aren't really thinking about, and Nathan brought it up earlier about having an exit strategy. So the way that we basically position our notes is that so they're securitizable, right? So it needs to be standard. Usually Fannie or Freddie is kind of the standard industry note. So we need to make sure ours is standard, but then every investor wants a little nuance and stuff. So you guys should all be thinking kind of the same, right? So we're protecting ourselves, we're paying law firms to make sure the right note, the right language is there so that we can then sell that to a larger correspondent, usually that then securitizes it. So if the note's not securitizable, then it's really, you're not going to have those exit strategies that you really want. So for me, looking at these creative notes when we're taking people out of them, right? I don't really see them getting created like you guys do. But when we're taking people out, it is interesting when they're not really standard. And I have a feeling that that you guys deal with this all the time, where people are putting themselves at risk, as you mentioned, not being able to foreclose properly or not being able to then get out of it if they need to resell it. I'm sure those are some of your challenges, but again, I haven't been there myself. But coming from the other end, that's what I could see being the biggest mistakes, because I wouldn't want that note, right? I'm taking them out of a note and putting them in a note that can be securitized and can be fully enforceable, fully foreclosed in all different states. And that's what our license is for that you mentioned before. So, I would recommend to your listeners to put themselves in my shoes, right? You would want to securitize it the same way I do, right? I would say it and make sure your note is ready to go if that day comes, as Nathan mentioned, when you get sick and needs to go, get top dollar for it. And, you did mention some due diligence. I don't know what due diligence your guys are doing on average, because I don't even really see that, right? I see the note, I see the payoff. That's really all I see on the takeout end, right? But I don't know what due diligence your people are doing up front. I would recommend they also do more of that. And you guys mentioned you had a book on that.
Yeah, so there's two different due diligence right now, right? There's the lender side of due diligence where they're valuing the borrower, right? They get the house to secure the property, they get the information about the house, they fix it up, whatever they do with it. And then they go ahead and, find a borrower to fit the house. And they come up with the terms, make sure the borrower is underwritten, make sure that the borrower is, the Dodd-Frank rules are in place, and make sure that the DTI is good. Down payment's good. Everything's there in place for them to really kind of move forward. But from the note
And then
buying side, we're doing and make sure the paperwork collateral is right, making sure that these, what's going on with the borrower in the past? What's going on now? Are they paying? Are they not paying? Are we foreclosing? What's the status of foreclosure? Is the collateral file solid? What's
have they
it?
done bankruptcy
What
in the
other liens on
past?
the property?
What state it is in? Do we need any licensing for that state? What's current interest rate? When's the last time they made a payment? What's been their pay history over time? Can we see if they've made on-time payments all the time, or have there been some late payments in there? Like that's the kind of things that we're looking at when we're looking at buying a note.
Yeah, so I don't know how much you guys really standardize that, right? And that's kind of where I'm coming in, is trying to standardize that. And
Sure.
hopefully your groups can take a page out of our book and standardizing that as much as they can. And I think that would
So
be the
problem with
thing.
standardization in our space is you have a borrower who's maybe an I-10 borrower, one with bad history, maybe not W-2. So the bank typical process of underwriting these borrowers are extremely difficult. I think where you fit in the puzzle is that there are underwriters who will underwrite these kind of notes. What they don't have is that person to turn around and say, I need that licensed origination person to go in there and originate that note, where the underwritten process may be a little bit, it's a little old-fashioned, right? You may need like, okay, you have to pay off this cell phone and do this, or hey, the W-2 is older, they don't qualify for the typical Fannie and Freddie products. And that's where our space comes in, where we'll buy that note if it's secured right, but the underwriting is not a rubber stamp process.
Yeah, exactly. We do that with our non-QM program. So we deal with a lot of I-10, foreign national, everything that your standard stuff doesn't do. So there are a lot of outlets. We call them my investors, right? That are buying the notes for me, right? That have these written programs. So the closer you guys and your clients can get to those written programs, the closer they'll get to being securitized, right? Because I'm selling them to the guys that are securitizing these DSCR notes in bulk. So the more they can do, the better. And the DSCR, there's a big appetite right now as well in secondary. So I know you guys kind of have your own pool, right, and your own thing. But for those people that are looking, maybe have a large, portfolio of notes, if they have done the proper due diligence and they are truly securitizable notes, you can make some big bucks upstream, because the appetite for DSCR is just crazy right now, and there's not a lot of people doing activity, right? So activity's still down, but DSCR is just hungry, right? The DSCR rates are coming. I do a show every morning. I know you, like you said, David, your people don't listen, but we do our daily rates, and conventional investment is more expensive. Fannie Mae is more expensive today, right now, for me to do a 30-year Fannie Mae investment than a 30-year DSCR with a 3-year prepay, right? So 3-year prepay is pretty standard, and we're beating it by just a hair, but it's been like that for the last 3 weeks, right? So the DSCR secondary is really hungry. So if you can standardize at least to that, it's pretty easy, right? So DSCR is pretty easy to standardize. The I-10 stuff, that is difficult, as you mentioned. That's
Tricky.
very hard to get a one written program that works for all the banks and outlets. It's just not going to happen. So you do have to have some flexibility within there. But the DSCR, that is becoming a very large secondary market. And it's having, I guess I would say, the most positive activity when the rest of the market is kind of coming,
Gotcha.
the sky is falling, right? Every
So
headline you see in the major news is the sky is falling with rates. But DSCR just keeps coming closer and closer to the conventional stuff everybody's used to. So
So
That's where my head's at, is DSCR all the way. If I was you guys, I would be trying to securitize everything as close to the industry standard of DSCR, as close to one DSCR as you can. And that also means you probably got to really work with actually seeing who's leasing up the space and making sure they're leased out and ready to go. But once you have those assets and they're actually leased, then you could really, really securitize them for some big money, especially at the rates you guys get. It's crazy, right? That you guys write the notes at.
So a couple of things there. So let's go back and for those of our listeners who don't know what DSCR is, can you explain what that is, what that stands for, and how is that different?
So DSCR is our favorite loan. So that's debt service coverage ratio, and basically no income, no employment. So it allows us to do it business purpose loans, which I'm sure a lot of you guys are, the people that are not licensed, as you mentioned, are trying to fall in that category where you can kind of get away with it, right? So we do a lot of those, but DSCR is typically business purpose, which allows a lot of flexibility with secondary and the laws and all that stuff, a lot of flexibility with licensing. But it's no income, no employment, just the estimated rents from the appraisal versus the expenses, right? The PITIA of the mortgage and the expenses for the property. So as long as the property cash flows, that's a super liquid investment. Anything over a one DSCR that cash flows monthly is basically going to be a solid note if you have a prepayment penalty. Anything without a prepayment penalty is not going to be as attractive, and it's going for less than conventional. But anything with a prepayment penalty 3 to 5 years is going to be sold on secondary for a higher price than Fannie, which is just, it's never really happened before, right? And as far as I've been only doing this maybe 5 years, but there's been a lot of liquidity, and it's never been like this, right? And DSCR is kind of the name of the game, I guess I would say, where all of the investors are saying this is where our money needs to go, this is where the growth is, this is where the opportunity is, especially when conventional's dying up. I'm sure they'll change their tune once we get some more action, but for right
But
now,
just
it's
a little
the name
more
of the game.
clarity on the DSCR, right? Most people here are doing residential properties, right? If a borrower comes to you and wants to create a loan with a borrower who lives in the home, would you consider that a DSCR?
Nah, we can't do that. So that's where the licensing comes in, right? So your clients, don't have that same bar that I do, but yes, we can't do any of that business purpose type stuff with the primary borrowers. Of course, your investors could, right? If they're planning on the borrower, eventually it not being a primary home, primary occupancy, of course, as long as the rents versus the, relative costs, it's positive, then you should be good. But yeah, for us, we have to have income if it's a primary home, second home, anything like that. It's only those true business purpose that we can use those DSCR loans for. So it's kind of a gray area. It's kind of the cross between commercial and residential. And it's become that gray area has become the big, the big pool out there of where everybody's heading, because it's a lot of flexibility. A lot of flexibility
Absolutely.
for people on my end with licensing where we may not have to have it. A lot of flexibility in secondary where they don't have to be as tight on the DTI, as you guys mentioned, and all the stuff that isn't as black and white as rents versus expenses,
And I think what people don't realize is that the DSCR loan is a business loan, right? It's a business-to-business mindset where what does business to business mean? This doesn't mean that you're lending money to a, big national business. It just means it's not a personal loan. It's not going to a residential borrower. It's really going to another business, right? A landlord could be a business, right? It could be big, it could be small. So that's a big thing for it. Now, would you guys ever consider doing loans or underwriting a owner-occupant borrower who they sell or finance, doing a wrap note where they go in there and they would give a loan to a borrower who's underwritten, has all the credentials, and give them a loan and write that underwriting?
Well, I can definitely help out. Yeah. I mean, if you guys are providing the liquidity and stuff, then yeah, it's just to meet our secondary, our typical written guidelines, or sell it to Fannie or Freddie, obviously has to meet all their stuff. But of course, I'm definitely open to helping your guys create those notes correctly. I see the most opportunity in the DSCR, but obviously you guys have been doing this for many years, and so the traditional stuff is no problem as well. We have all the tools available. that all your traditional lenders would have. So we can use those when we're underwriting the file. So it's really easy for us to do that. The part that is more of the gray area where the opportunity is, where I think your guys could grow more, grow the portfolio more, is the DSCR, where it becomes easier, more flexible, and more securitizable, which is, what's kind of counterintuitive, right? You would think that those are the worst loans out there. Like, okay, it has no, I don't have any DTI, I don't have any personal income, I have nothing to do with this borrower. How is that a better loan than a loan with personal income, with W-2, with the whole underwriting? And it's just, that's the industry we're in right now. And it's interesting. That's probably what I would have your people take away from here, is that you don't have to stick to the fully underwritten borrowers as long as it's an investment property, right? So primary, got to stick to your guns, but where you can let loose a little bit and find some more opportunity is any investment stuff, where you traditionally might have thought you had to be a little more strict on the DTI. Not at all, right? It's strictly, we only need a credit report is going to set the pricing. So you're going to need to pull credit. You're going to need to prove that there's no late. So a fraud guard is what we use as our typical vendor for, as Nathan mentioned, just checking for foreclosures, bankruptcies, stuff like that. And mortgage payment history, no mortgage missed payments, right? That's basically it, along with the rents. So there's no, an ID, right? We have to prove ID, right? Same Patriot Act stuff. So not a lot of moving parts, a lot easier for you guys, a lot easier for us. So, I mean,
Absolutely.
I preach about DSCR all day. You hear me on the show. So that's obviously what I love. But the primary stuff, sure, use my license all you want. I don't
What does
really
a
care
borrower,
about
what does
that.
a lender have to bring to you for you to create a loan for them? What items would you give a task list, kind of thing?
I mean, if it depends on what guidelines they're going for, right? So if they're wanting it to be to Fannie or Freddie guidelines, we all, use that, and we can use all the same tools as Fannie and Freddie. And there's pretty standardized lists, for any conventional loan. So your typical stuff, typical package. But for the DSCR, like I mentioned, it's pretty easy. You just need an ID, right? Because we're gonna need to pull their fraud guard or whatever. So we'll do that as a lender. We're gonna need an appraisal, obviously, but we'll order that. To get the rents and stuff, we're gonna need to pull their history, right? So just a couple things. So for DSCR, like nothing. It's pretty crazy. Just an ID and a pulse, and they have to pull credit. For a full package, just your typical stuff, and we would be happy to underwrite it to, non-QM guidelines or standard Fannie and Freddie guidelines. It really matters where you guys want to securitize this, but most of them probably aren't, right? It seems like they're kind of more holding them or selling them to other private investors, in this case.
Typically,
But yeah, if you could, if they want to go for the gusto, and use me, because I'd probably be more expensive than your typical due diligence, right? Then we could write to those specific guidelines to make it securitizable. So I think that would be the advantage. I'd probably charge more than your typical. I don't know who you guys are using typically, probably some underwriting or lawyer services to draft docs. I can kind of put that all together, but I would probably charge more than your average. But the benefit would be, at the end of the day, I'm going to write it to where I'm securitizing it. And you got, you guys are going to be selling 3 points higher than I am. And the same guidelines is going to be crazy, right? So you guys will have a much more superior note at your rates than I would. But I would
So if
same guidance.
someone is looking to create a note, seller finance, whatever, they obviously get an appraisal. That you guys can pull credit for them. You would underwrite them, make sure that they're, what the credentials are. These are typically all non-QM loans. And then you would do the paper, the collateral, you underwrite it, the whole thing. You would do, and you put the collateral paperwork together, the note or mortgage, right? No note, mortgage, deed of trust, whatever it is for that state. You would create the whole paperwork, and then they would go through that process of closing that deal out and then do everything else. And then you would direct them to a servicer or recommend that they do a servicer, correct?
Yeah, the servicer was also a piece. I don't know how often your guys take advantage of a subservicer once they create that, but that would be my recommendation. A lot of the subservicers you can get to take on that foreclosure risk, depending on the size of your note. And you guys have some meat on those notes, right? You guys are way higher than I am, so you guys have a little bit to give. So I don't have a subservicer because I sell the loans immediately to an investor that then services them. I don't service at all. So I'm not the service lender, the servicer. But yeah, I would definitely recommend them to get the servicer. But and we would funded as table funded. So we often fund loans where we're doing the whole loan, but the funds are coming from another source, right? The actual
Correct.
liquidity, the actual wire. So we would do everything. Your investors, your people that would be providing, buying the note would get everything, send their wire into title as the table funding, but all the notes and
Put the
everything would be in
tag.
our name, right? So all the licensing, everything would be in our name, and you guys would just take it out at the closing table, right? So table funding is
Gotcha.
kind of the channel that we would put this under as a category.
Makes sense. With you mentioned before about bundling up notes, right? That's something I know a lot of our note buyers are, interested in, right? Nathan has a pool of say 50 to 100 notes. Could he take those notes and sell them on the market?
I mean, you kind of got to have a license in some ways. So, I mean, someone like me could probably help you with that. It depends, right? So, yeah, you got to be careful, right? You got to be fully licensed most of the time. But if you have a takeout in mind, you can usually execute that through an intermediary or whatever. So, it all depends on how they're securitized, though. So it takes a whole lot of time to go through those packages and do all the due diligence because you're going to need a third party, right? So you'll need to take all those 50 notes, use a third party due diligence to, make sure it's securitizable, right? And they all meet a standard. And then you can do your typical securitization sale. So yes, they can, but I think the challenge would be, again, as you mentioned, to standardize. This industry doesn't, or your typical private note creator doesn't have a standardized process where everything's going to be the
Sure.
same. And when you're securitizing loans too, you're going to need packages that are in the same general likeness, right? General credit score range, general rate range, right? Usually, so you can sell any notes at a seven that are between, 6.5 and 7.5, as long as the credit's the same and stuff. So you have to build these profiles. So that would just be the challenge is, we have. My company doesn't, but the companies I work with that do this and sell the large securitizations have whole staffs, right? That they go
Sure.
through, get them ready, send them to the third party due diligence. When they come back a couple months later, they have all their stuff to package it and then get it ready to sell. And then they start marketing and taking offers on that package. So it is a lot of
So,
work, but if they could get a standardized process, then they could use some third parties to really push them through there, right? So, yes, I think they could take advantage. I do think they'll need a little bit of help, most likely for your average.
and how many notes, like if you're going to securitize a portfolio, how many notes would you need before you can start looking at that? Like I imagine five is too little, but like what
See,
kind
is
of
that the
questions is
number
that?
or the amount of the UPB?
It's either, right? So there's
Okay.
a lot of liquidity right now. So if you're talking Fannie or Freddie, there's all these rules, right? So Fannie or Freddie, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about basically REITs, right? Real estate investment. We're talking about stock money out there that's going to be coming through us through some sort of investment bank outlet that's going to provide the liquidity in some way. They'll usually take a little or a lot, right? Especially when we're
Okay.
talking about this non-QM stuff. So there's really not a limit. Technically, yeah, I would say five would be kind of the low end. And anything under $1 million wouldn't be worth it, So you want maybe a 5, 10 million, you could be talking 100 million, you'd be like standard, right? A securitization of 100 to 250 million is pretty standard for them to trade 100 to 250 million at a time. But small time investors, I'm sure they would love your guys' notes because the premium they're going to pay you on the rates that you guys do is just it's going to be enormous. So
So what do
what
you
kind of
think the
rates are they
typical
looking for?
sales price yield is? What do you think
Yeah.
they're selling at?
So I mean, like right now, I'm securitizing. Look, here I have them in the other screen here. So I'm doing notes right now at. So DSCR notes are sevens to eights. So seven to eights is selling. I'm selling them at par price, right? So I'll securitize it. I'll charge a couple points. I mean, I'll do the loan. I'll charge a couple points, and then when they securitize it, they're paying me 100. They're just paying me the full loan amount, right? So I'll charge a couple points. I get the full loan amount. We're selling them at par usually. So 7.5 at par. You guys are at 10, 12, 15%. So you're talking 110, right? If you're trying to sell to that same investor, if you securitize it to the same standard. So yeah, right now
Interesting.
I'm selling between 7 and 8 at,
Yeah.
100 basically. So you know
Yeah.
the math
So we could
there.
take a, we bought one just recently. It's 11.99.
I can literally turn around and sell a thing at 110, 150% of UPB, and which makes no
Interesting.
sense in our brains. I don't
No.
understand why people do that, but that's
No.
beside the point.
Well, that's where it you know, your guys' industry is way over here, and we're way over here on like the super strict side, because it's a lot of work for me. It takes me, you know, when they say it takes 30 days to close a loan, it's not me not working, right? And it's not me personally, but it's not my team not working. There's a lot of stuff that you don't see when you're the customer, and you guys probably don't do as the typical, you know, lender, private lender, I guess you would say, whatever role you want to put yourself in. So it's hard. So for you to get to where we are is going to be a challenge. You know, there's a gap. But if you can get there, and I mean, notes are notes, right? So the market's the
And
market,
then,
price is the price. If your note is at 12%, mine note's at 8%, it's the same exact borrower, same exact profile, same exact property, they're going to pay you more for yours, right? It's a no-brainer. So there's liquidity out there. There's hundreds of millions, billions of dollars out there in money that wants these loans and wants your guys' yields. So yeah, I mean, there's a big opportunity there to connect dots. It's just a
This
challenge
is
for
why
sure.
I love doing these. Our show, because the topic goes one way and then we go a completely different direction because we don't know what's going to come out of these shows. I
Yeah, we didn't
promise
talk
you.
about this before, did we?
No,
Right? We didn't, we don't prep
we
for,
didn't talk about
we
this
prep for a
part.
topic and then these kind of things come up and you know our brains start going, which is awesome, right? So
What's
Nathan, you
the
get some
you said like
questions.
it's a, you know, a 30, 60-day process to get it to that securitized product. So obviously there's time in there. What's the cost to get that done, give or take?
I mean, we're paying usually probably $2,000 a loan in costs. So, you know, that would be my cost. So obviously if I'm going to do this for someone else, there'd be, you know, costs in addition to that. So that's what I was telling you guys before. It usually costs about $1,500 in underwriting processing type fees to if I use a third party or if I use it in-house. And then we use typically a law firm to draft all of our documents and do all the closing stuff. And that's usually about $500. So about $2,000 what I pay, but you know, I'm doing hundreds of loans. So, you know, if your average investor does one a year, they might, you know, expect a little bit different pricing than that. But that's kind of the fixed cost. Services, you know, you charge the borrower for typically as much services as you can. So I try to, you know, pass those costs, the appraisal and obviously all that stuff. So any of the services we can legally charge for, we will. Any of the services that we can't, what's an example? Like FraudGuard. You mentioned the fraud stuff. We use FraudGuard as an industry standard. And that, you know, costs $50 a file, but we can't charge a borrower for that because that's for our due diligence, right? It's not a borrower cost. So yeah, I mean,
So
it's not
you've got a
that
package of
expensive to do. It's more of the work and the guidelines. So we're partnering with an investor who says, here's the guidelines, right? Here's what you have to underwrite to. Then we go and get our underwriter, get our processor, get our file together, right? And it costs us, as you mentioned, you know, $2,000 plus to get all those people in place. But then those people still got to do all the work. And then, you know, I have 10 different staff members to help that process as well. So there's a lot of overhead. But the actual per file cost is not that expensive. It's more of having a system and a structure in place and those written guidelines where everything is exactly by the guides, right? We have to have a clear fraud guard on every single file. Every single alert of any kind has to be cleared. And sometimes clearing one fraud guard alert could take 100 documents, right? We might have to go to a bankruptcy case from years ago, get the whole case to confirm that the borrower actually did, you know, clear the full bankruptcy and stuff, right? So it might have not, you know, the state didn't file whatever they needed to file to clear it. We get the paperwork from the attorney. The attorney says, we sent it to the state didn't do it. You know, you could get stuck for a month in one little tiny condition, and even a DSCR loan has to have a clear fraud, right? So it can
So it's
get quick, but it can also get wide, right? So that's where the challenge is. If you have that structure and you build that securitization, that standard where everything is 100% fraud guard cleared, then you know that you can securitize that note, which sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's super hard, takes the borrower time, takes less time, takes a lot of, you know, work from my admin staff. Not the underwriter's not going to do that. That, you know, I paid the fee to the law firm's not going to do that. It's the administrative task. And I, you know, your guys probably, you know, couldn't do this on their own. So they would probably need someone like us that knows what they're doing. But it's not a huge cost. I mean, I guess that's what I want to say is it's more work and knowledge and structure than it is cost per se. The cost per loan is not too crazy. It's more of that
No.
structure, you know?
It's not
I mean,
bad,
if
but
you're
if you
getting
got a package of
110%.
100 loans, you're talking 200 grand. Like that adds up pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys were, you know, if we were just an underwriting company, yeah, or something like that, right? So I'm not interested in 2 grand alone, though. I'm interested in we make a commission on the loans, right?
Yeah.
Percentage, right? So those companies that I use are like the third party processing, third party underwriters, and of course the law firms are always third party, right? So we're putting those people in place, which you guys could as well. There's companies out there. It's just the scale, and I'm not interested in that. I could, hire my own underwriter and pay them, hourly, and then make a margin on that. But that's not what really we're about. We're about creating the note and using
Right.
those best practices. So I use the best law firm, right? That all the big dogs use to actually do the documents, and I use the industry standard processors and underwriters that are industry standard. There's no point in trying to make a
Nope.
couple bucks off that, right? So that's not my business. My business is putting my clients in the best position to win, which is using those best vendors. So I don't care about that $2,000 at all. It's more about getting the deal done, and then yeah, we're gonna make our 2% commission or whatever we're gonna make as the originator on the loan. But for you guys that are, obviously in a different seat, the cost isn't that much, and I would probably have to charge you way more than $2,000 that it's gonna cost me. But there's a delta there, that you guys can make some money there, and you don't have to, charge
So for every
2% loans like I
loan
do.
you're saying is $2,000, right? So if you had, say, 10 loans up to $2 million, you're saying the cost would be about $20,000, give or take, right?
Yeah, just for the,
To
like I
do
said,
that
the third
transaction.
party underwriting type, like the
Yeah.
cost. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's not, the cost isn't that intensive. It's more of, you don't realize that you're gonna have to have, five people on your staff, which all make 100 grand, right?
No,
So
and we would all be
that's 500 grand a
happy.
year that just kind of floats around that makes the math a little different. But the actual, per loan cost isn't crazy. But it's a
Yeah.
lot more to get to where I
Because you
am
sit there
than
and
just
you
that.
spent 20 grand, right? You sold $2 million worth of assets at 7%. You're sitting there and you bought it at 13, right? It's
Yeah.
you're hitting home runs.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
Interesting.
crazy stuff. Yeah. So Nick, when you're doing all this kind of DSCR loans and whatnot, are you ever pre-approving the borrower at all? Working with a borrower and finding the lender.
Well, I mean, that's kind of our job. We're the lender. So, our role is, they apply with us and they need a yes or a no, right? So
Okay.
legally, that's our responsibility. That's kind of the RMLO hat is, someone applies, whether it's business purpose or not, right? You come to me. I don't know whether you're gonna close in an LLC or not for sure. I have to treat you as, the same as anybody. And I'll have to get you an answer within 3 days, right? You apply, you give me your, I pull your credit, you give me all your info, I have to give you an answer in those 3 days. So
Gotcha. So you're pre-approving the borrower.
yeah, I mean, we're pre-approving the borrower for whatever they submitted for, right? So if they're just going for, I need to know what I qualify for, then yeah, for sure. But if they already have a thing in mind, then yeah, I mean, we're going straight to, do you qualify for this house if they submitted a house, in the application. And that's where I didn't like at the bank, right? It was either you fit in this box or not, and that was it, right? It was Fannie's box. And that was it. Fannie and Freddie, the, government
Sure.
or FHA, you fit in this box, or I have to just tell you, sorry, bye. So that's why we had to go and find where. My goal is that everybody that comes in, I have an outlet for them. And that's typically what I preach to my people, whether that's a DSCR loan. And then sometimes even it has to go like full commercial where we're just doing asset-based lending, right? Hard money type
Sure.
lending, which I'm sure a lot of your guys do as well, is just, they're just looking at collateral and that's it, just appraisal. And that's the I call it the hierarchy that we have to go through, right? VA is always the best loan. If they qualify VA, I have to by law give them VA. They tell me they're a VA borrower. I have to give them that. I can't even go down the list, right? So we have a little bit of a different type of qualification.
But most of the people though come from us would be person who's owns a property and they're self financing it to a borrower and then want to have their borrower pre-approved so they can create the note.
Yeah, for
But
sure.
most
Yeah,
of the
we
time these
pre-approve
borrowers,
borrowers. all the time. Yeah. So if they don't have a contract in place already with the seller financing in place, then yeah, we can pre-approve borrowers. I mean, that's our job by law. So you don't need to know me to do that. Just tell your borrower, hey, go click next button and they'll get an approval within 3 days because that's our job, right? So yeah,
And
that's
how much does that typically cost a borrower?
to do the approval. Oh, it's free. Yeah, nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, we pull the credit for free. We don't charge them up front or anything. And yeah, if they qualify, we'll send them the letter. If they don't qualify, we'll send them some tips on how to improve their credit. I'm big on the credit improving as well. I'm not a
Sure.
credit improvement company, but I always pull the simulators. So whenever we pull credit and their credit's low, we'll run the simulator and say, hey, you need to work on XYZ. Come back in 3 months once you work on XYZ. They click the button again. If their credit's improved, great. We'll send them the letter. So you guys can use
Sweet.
that to your advantage for sure.
Yeah.
Because yeah, me being licensed, I have to by law get that answer to them quickly. So you guys know that I'll quickly get them the answer as long as they get us their W-2s and all that, if that's what we're going for. And then yeah, we'll qualify them for a conventional loan, but if they're going to end up doing some creative stuff, you'll know that they at least qualify for the most restrictive, typically, which is Fannie or Freddie conventional.
Yeah.
What typically is the biggest problem borrowers are having when they come to you? Just what kind of crazy stuff have you seen where you're like, dude, you can't qualify for anything?
Well, right now it's just a lot of people are priced out. So that's our biggest challenge.
Okay.
We've pre-approved people 6 months ago that are nowhere near approving now, right? Or I guess
Wow.
now it's about a year or whatever, right? Since the rates started climbing. So for us, the challenge is usually everybody has bigger eyeballs than they can afford, right? So everybody comes to you, I want to get a $500,000 house. And then you do the math. And if they can make it, it's either barely there. And then guess what? The rates go up by half a point. And now it's not even in the ballpark right now. Now we got to be more realistic. So that's what's had a lot of people sitting on the fences right now. I don't know if your types of clients are in that area. But as far as like problems, the biggest thing we had recently was just all the COVID stuff. So COVID had extra guidelines.
Okay.
Which, as private investors, you guys probably didn't know that Fannie and Freddie put all these extra guidelines, especially for like self-employed borrowers. We had to get a bunch more due diligence on the self-employed borrower for the last, 4 years since COVID, because a lot of people were getting the government loans, the PPP loans, right? The SBA loans. That threw a lot of deals for a loop. Haven't seen a lot since because that kind of, went through its course. But there were all these extra flags we had to check for those SBA type of loans. We had to have the bank statements to prove their income when before we just got their tax returns, what they claimed. And
Yeah.
then during COVID, they just released it about, I think it was about 4 months ago. They don't make us now get extra bank statements on top of the tax returns to prove the business income.
So if a borrower is in default, right, and we're going through foreclosure and they're just behind, is that something we can send to you and say, hey, listen, can you qualify this guy to for a different loan and get us out?
Yeah, but that's difficult, right? So you guys aren't reporting on credit, so I don't want to put my foot in my mouth here. So let me think about my
Most of our
answer here. So
servicers
I don't
are,
want you guys to take advantage of me. But yes, if they've missed a payment, you need to report it, right? I'm gonna send
No,
you.
they are. Our servicers report it for us, right? We use a
Yeah,
couple
but if
servicers
you're in
who
private,
report.
you can fill out the form however you want, right? I send you a VOM, you fill it out. Please be honest, right? If they've missed a payment, I gotta know because we're all
Yeah,
screwed.
no. It would be more like, listen, they're 2 months behind, they're constantly doing stuff like that, and they're willing to refi out, or maybe their interest rate's at 12, 13%, right? And they want to get down to a lower rate. It's something that maybe they've been behind. Could we have a bar right now that I've literally sent like notice of default like 4 times? I would love for them to get out of the situation. But it sounds to me that most likely they probably wouldn't qualify because of all the bad history they have,
Well,
bad credit history.
I have solutions for everybody. So again, that's kind of my forte and why I went away from the bank and the more traditional route. I wanted to be in control of my destiny. So what I preached to my team, I got over 300 loan officers, is we want to have a home for every loan, right? So whether that means we got to get as creative as we can get. I mean, if you give me some people that'll do seller finance, my guys will work with them to make it happen if that's the last ditch opportunity, right? My guys are willing and able to do whatever it takes. But within the written programs, there's a lot of stuff in non-QM that allows for bad situations, right? So we have like our alt doc A, B, C, and then even some, lower than that, where you can have 130. Some of them you can have 230. Some of them you can have 160. But mortgage history is very important, right? So if you got like 260s, I don't think there's anything I can do for you. And hopefully you guys are honest when you fill that out, because
So
I would
we would
love to
actually
take you
have the
out, but
borrower,
once they
right?
go
It's something
260s.
we can present to a servicer and say, listen, guys, see if you can get the borrower to send their application to, Nick and his crew over here and see if we can get them to refinance out of us. I have a loan right now, it's a 14% interest rate, right? Could that person who's struggling could get into a 7-8%? Again, if their credit score is decent enough, right? And they're behind our payments, they may be up on everything else. I'm not saying to be, kind of cheating the system, but if this person can qualify and we're just getting tired of them, we can refer them over and say, listen, go get refied out.
Oh yeah, that's what we're here for. Yeah. And it will help the borrower too, right? I mean, I'm all for taking someone from a 14 to a 7 if they're better, and it will make them better. So yeah, if they're just short every month by, a couple hundred bucks, and that's just killing them, that could make the difference for someone's life. So that's totally cool for me to solve people's problems. And that's
And
what
then,
we're
as
about.
far
That's
as filling
what
out your docs and being honest on it, most note buyers will use a third-party servicer. So it's not us reporting it. It's going to get from the servicer. They have no incentive to fudge the numbers there. It's
When
going to
we
be open
get
to that.
the third party servicers is very easy, but I do get weary when I get the handwritten out in pen,
For sure.
VOAs from the seller finance, and they skip a couple boxes, and it's like, oof, I don't know. I need to follow up, right? And I'll usually have my people call and follow up, because that is where we get a little discrepancy. And we're doing a lot of takeouts on the flips, right? So we'll have some weird hard money people, and they're at the end of their term, and we can't get it closed. Here's a good example too of you guys that do the short note. I don't know how many of you guys doing the 12-month notes and the super short term notes.
Same, yeah.
But if I mean that's the typically the notes we're taking out is a lot of the hard money stuff. And the problem I find a lot of the times is at the end of the 12 months, they're not extending and they're not giving terms, right? So they'll fill out the VOM. I can't refinance them until month 12, right? They have to have 12 months seasoning, right, to get the full thing. But then we'll get stuck in this middle where either it's a subservicer and they just say, no, it's done. Our contract's over, right? We're not going to fill out. We're not going to say that they get another month, because they don't, because we're bound by XYZ, right? So we could get stuck in this gray area where it's like the private note holder will give them a 1 month extension, but we have to like get it in writing, and the subservicer kind of sticks us there. So that is a challenge a lot of the times where we're trying to be as helpful as we can, but we get stuck in between kind of those two parties where we just have to know, yes, you'll give them a month because I need a couple days. There has to be a little leeway between the 12 month this note's over until we can actually take them out. There's gonna be a 30 day, so the more flexible you guys can get with that, the better. When I'm talking to your guys, like, help me out, right? Get flexible with extensions. Just put it in your contract. Charge a point to extend it 6 months. I don't know how often you guys do that on your short term stuff. But that's the more standard hard money stuff that I like, where it just says, we can read it right there. It just says if it goes past 12 months, we'll give one extension at 1 point cost, and then I just know the payoff's gonna go up by 1 point. It's just auto.
Gotcha.
There's no complicated stuff. And we can be more helpful that way. So that would be where we get stuck a lot of the times. But the more they can use the servicer, as you mentioned, Nathan, the better, because that makes it super easy. If it's an automated one, super easy, super, super easy.
That's what we're looking for, is those ones with servicers. And we get those too, where it comes from the seller finance guy. And yeah, it's a spreadsheet at best. But how do I know, not that I doubt anybody, but at the same time, like, I got to be able to prove accuracy. And
Yeah,
yeah,
and
we
at the
really have to
same
go back to
time,
the
like
borrower
you're
and say,
saying, is they want to get rid of the note, so they're incentivized to fill it out, But then you also get some guys, like I said, that will say, no, I'm not extending it. I'm like, well, I can't get you your money until you extend it, because I can't get this approved until you say that you'll take one more payment from this guy, or you'll just let him slide on the payment, right? So you'll get them to fill out that thing, and if they just don't understand that the goal is to get them their money, they need to be honest, one, which, obviously, hopefully everybody is. But
Sure.
two is flexible, right? If it's 12-month term, write in what the next payment's going to be, or if there is a next payment, so that we can then take them out, because we have the underwriter's not going to, if they're foreclosing today, the underwriter, we can't, if they're out of compliance, if they're defaulted, it's just doesn't
Yeah.
work, right? And you don't want
Yeah.
to do a whole
Yeah.
new note and stuff.
No.
So auto
No.
extending the notes would definitely be a big thing for those short-term guys.
Interesting. I never thought about it. Usually, typically, it's a 12-month balloon, right? And that's it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, which is fine to write it in, but then you just give yourself a 60-day for financing, because all of our takeout stuff for DSCR is going to be 12-month seasoning to give us the best terms. 6 months I can do, but a lot of times there's restrictions like improvements, right? So I'll need to like prove the rehabs or whatever they did to get the value up. And then the zero seasoning, there's only like two options and it's really strict. So from you guys structuring your stuff, yes, the better, the more you can give me a 60 days past 12, you'll
Yeah.
have better luck getting people taken out, which helps everybody, right?
Interesting.
Very
Well,
cool.
before we disconnect, Nathan always has a question he wants to ask all our
Yeah, so
special
I'm
guests.
curious, Nick, with your background, and what you're doing, I'm more curious where you see interest rates going. Where I just read something here this morning that said 7.5%. It's the highest it's been in I don't know how long, and they're expecting it to go up. And so I don't know. What do you think? Where with what you've seen, and where do you think we're going? Where are rates going?
Talk about this every day. I love this stuff. I mean, it's gonna be tough. So it's all about the Fed, right? So we're always going off the Fed's movement. So the only, I guess, bright light, as I mentioned before, is DSCR, right? Which is a little counterintuitive. So as the Fed's been going up, and the standard 30-year Fannie Freddie's been going up, we've seen the DSCR come down. So that's where we see some opportunity in non-QM and the liquidity in the markets that are not your traditional investors, right? These are the REITs who need the higher yields, so they're wanting these more risky products, but they also want them securitized and standardized. So that's kind of why I always preach about, this is kind of a nascent industry, right? This DSCR is kind of this hybrid between your old school commercial loans, which were, asset based, and there is underwriting, but it's just appraisal versus just the property rent, and then clear the borrower of all their other mortgages and all the other fraud and bankruptcies and all that stuff. So a lot of opportunity there. Rates in general, I think we're gonna keep going up for the next couple months until I hope that the June is the one, because we just had some stuff in our favor finally yesterday. I think June would be my preference to where it starts to go down. So we'll slowly creep up until June. But it's probably more likely July. You hear all the news saying it's more likely July now. So once the Fed moves in July, we'll see it turn back to normal and we'll start the downward trend. So I would say we'll probably get close to 8 before July.
Wow.
And DSCR is right around 8 right now, so DSCR won't go up. So that's going to be crazy when your primary is the same as the DSCR stuff, just because there's so much liquidity in that area.
Ah, makes sense.
Yeah.
It's just
Cool. Interesting.
counterintuitive, but yeah, I would say July is when we would see, realistically, people will see an actual, the headlines change.
Awesome. Well, Nick,
Interesting.
we have to thank you very much for joining us. A lot of cool information that I never knew of, never even thought about, to be honest with you. So having that information is always an awesome thing. But I wanted to make sure if you guys do want to connect with Nick, the link is inside the chat. You could definitely do that. All his information will be there. Hit that button and you'll get sent to a website, our website. You fill out the information. The information will be sent right to Nick and his information will be sent to you. Feel free to follow up with Nick and ask any questions. Check out his website. A wealth of information, wealth of experience. And it's awesome to have someone like that join us for this afternoon.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well,
Very
thank you
good. Thanks,
guys.
Nick.